Sean Clayton.
Hey, Mom, I'm done with my segment.
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, who joins us every day here with Bob, Dave, and Moore at 4 o'clock. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
You know, we were just now talking about Odell Beckham Jr. during the break. Did you watch the video of him swatting the cop on the backside?
I didn't see the video, no. You I know about the story, but not the video.
Yeah, you got to watch it because it sounds, listen, the cop didn't get hurt. It wasn't malicious in terms of trying to injure this person. But you watch it, and he's just kind of staring at the cop or security guard. I don't know which he is, but staring at him. And then you see him go up, and he whacks him on the backside. It wasn't just a little tap. But there's no smile. There's no, hey, isn't this great? We're celebrating a victory. He kind of just stares at him with a straight face like, now what? It was the weirdest moment. I'm thinking, why would you even do that? Nobody's saying the guy got hurt or anything or should press charges. But it was just a dumb thing and a series of dumb things that Odell does, like handing out money, which he knows is an infraction with the NCAA. Mm-hmm. And now this whole LSU postseason celebration has turned into a story about Odell Beckham Jr., which I think is pretty
ridiculous.
Sad.
Yeah, I mean, but that's Odell Beckham. I mean, he's not as bad as Antonio Brown, but I mean, he can't stop himself. And it's like, I don't know what he needs to do to stop himself, because it's ridiculous to see the type of things that he does. I mean, whether it's the $350,000 watch, some of the tirades on the sidelines. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Speaking of, you just mentioned Antonio Brown, Bob. Yeah. Drew Rosenhaus cut ties with him, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically said, look, until you get help, you're off my client list.
Yes, and I don't even think he would go back. I mean, because again, I mean, you know, he's ripped him at different times. I mean, it's just, you just wonder, you know, I mean, I don't know how he put up with him for so long.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like it's getting worse.
Yeah.
Oh, and no, so, no. Yeah, I mean, at one point, you just feel like, who was the guy from, I went to Boise State, was it Tyus, remember the receiver from Boise State that kind of had like a bipolar thing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he had a good game against the Seahawks.
Yeah, he played for the Lions.
I want to say it's Titus Young.
Titus Young, yeah.
Same type of thing where you just go, man, you know, there's help that you can get. And if you don't see it, like there needs to be like an intervention or something like that. And, you know, I'm forgetting names again, but the receiver who kind of went through that was with the Broncos. Now he's on
Brandon
Showtime.
Marshall.
Yeah, Brandon Marshall is a guy that kind of went through that, right?
Mm-hmm,
Do you remember that?
I mean, he had this disorder when he was in high school, and you know, he anger management and all that different stuff. And then now he goes around helping people.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just feel like it's too bad that somebody can't get a hold of him. And, you know, Antonio Brown, I mean, some of the things that he's done, he certainly needs to atone for. But, you know, if he goes and gets fixed and then you hear, you know, the same kind of things out of him as you do Brandon Marshall, you know, I think people are pretty, I don't want to say quick to forgive, but they will forgive him.
Right, right.
So, anyway.
But, yeah, it's just
too bad he's not getting help.
No, I agree. I mean, it's just so sad to see you know, somebody like that has those type of problems. But again, it's like at some point you got to get them fixed.
John, the four teams that are left, I'm seeing Chris Jones, Kansas City's defensive tackle. He's been had a problem with a calf. It looks like he might not play this week again. And then George Kittle with a sore ankle. What's the update on the health reports for these four teams?
Well, I mean, it looks like it's going to go down to the wire for both. I mean, Kittle's been fighting that ankle injury. I know Dee Ford may have to throw in because he's got that hamstring and groin that's still bothering him. And so that's not good. But, yeah, I think it's a little scary to see, all right, where are all these guys? But, you know, you figure that this is such a big game that no matter what, they're going to try to play because they need to be able to try to play.
If you're the Titans, we've talked over the years about the devaluing of the running back position, yet we've seen just how impactful and, I mean, if not for Derrick Henry, the Titans aren't in this conversation. They're not in the postseason. So
right. If
you're them, do you shell out the big bucks for him?
Yes. I think you shell out the big bucks for him and for Ryan Tannehill, because I think that you can see they've got a good coach, they've got a good defense, and you know their philosophy is to run the football and have a game manager, and it's worked. And so, I mean, you saw how Tannehill was able to get comeback victories. He was able to do so many good things. So, no, I think that would be the right thing to do. You know, don't blow it. You know, take care of the guys and make sure that you come out ahead.
Do you give the Titans much of a chance in that game? We were just debating who do you root for, and I'm like, man, I really love Patrick Mahomes, but I love the Titans story. And then somebody reminded me that Tyreek Hill's on the Chiefs, which makes it really hard to root for a win.
Right.
But how close do you see this matchup? How much of an opportunity do you give the Titans to continue this improbable run?
I think the problem is I just think that Patrick Mahomes is so good right now. How do you stop him? I mean, because you saw last week, I mean, they were down 24-0, and they scored 51 consecutive points. And regardless, I mean, for the most part, you know, Mahomes usually gets 30-point games. And if that's the case, they can't keep up with that. I mean, not with a running game. We saw that, you know, when Tennessee, even though they're not a big scoring team, you know, went to Baltimore, and the running team with over 200 yards rushing Baltimore, you know, couldn't handle it. And so I think that, you know, the earlier and most often that the Chiefs get the scores, then they can handle it. But I don't discount the chance that maybe, just maybe, there's a way that they can hang in there and try to, you know, keep running the football. Because if they don't have Chris Jones, and this is a team right now that's not good stopping the run, I mean, you can do some things on them.
Hey, John, you and I talked this morning about this, but just all of a sudden, I know you're fairly outraged as I am, yeah, just all the stuff about Pete Carroll and that he needs to be fired. And I saw a line, Russell Wilson continually held back by Pete's coaching. I mean, I feel like they just started paying attention to Russell, but, you know, there was a couple of, how about the throw to, and I know these are just a couple of plays, but Pete went for it with the fake punt. And it's, so as far as modernization and taking chances, they're saying he's too conservative and he'll never learn. What about the throw to DK Metcalf on the third down in Philadelphia that sealed that deal? I mean, I feel like this is it's pretty unfair, but it's probably just a product of the national, everybody is starting to focus on Russell Wilson and how good he is.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, you can see, unless they fix the offensive line and get that better, I mean, how many times can you go through these 50-some sack seasons and, you know, scrambling around? I mean, he's able to do it, but, you know, you want to make it as easy for him as possible. And, you know, sure, it may start games out slow. That's where the defense has to pick things up and start faster. But it's like the philosophy has gotten this team to the playoffs 8 of 10 years. This was not a team with a pass rush that should win 11 games in a playoff game.
Right.
They did. It's like, you know, they're asking, it's like, you know, they're also not following the trends in football, because I think you can see, I mean, San Francisco is a running team. You look at Tennessee, they're a running team. I mean, you know, the Packers now toward the end of the season started running the football a little bit more. I mean, you need to run the ball. And again, where I thought the improvement on the offense was is that they started throwing the screen passes, the quick passes, you know, getting the ball to the tight end quickly. I mean, they've advanced the offense, and they'll advance it even more next year. And remember, they did this with Doug Baldwin retiring. You know, Tyler Lockett easily moved into the number one slot. Metcalf moved into number two, and they were adequate at number three, but they've got to get a little bit better with their third receiver, and so that's what'll be, you know, figured out during the offseason. But they did great.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're like me, John, but I mean, all of those things, absolutely, you need offensive line, more receivers, but I think the first three or four are defense,
mm-hmm,
right? I mean, that's the major priority, you know, as far as pass rushing. Who would you like to see them draft?
No, I don't know about the name yet, because...
No, I don't mean names. I'm just saying
the end,
yeah. Pass rushers.
But then the question is, at 27, you saw it last year, are they going to get that pass rushing the end? And that means they probably will not, but they also have that second round pick if they need to move up to try to at least be in position if there is that young defensive end to get. I mean, you know, it's still not out of the question for them to make a trade, but what they need, I mean, they need Jadeveon Clowney or something comparable to him and a quick twitch guy on the other side to be able to get the double rush going. And they need to be able to get back to the stage where they can be a four-man rush team. And if they can do that and be able to drop seven, then things get better on defense. And you know, Quandre Diggs and Bradley McDougal will be the starting safeties because they work so well together and they're so good. So, you know, that's now been fixed. And again, it's a shame that, you know, they may not be able to get Marquise Blair on the field as often as most people would like. But again, they're playoff bound with those two safeties.
What about two of the top pass rushers, free agents, John? Shaquille Barrett with 19.5 sacks this year, and Ngakoue from Jacksonville with 8 sacks. Are they going to be franchised, or do you think they'll be available?
I know that Bruce Arians said that he's not going to let Barrett get out of there. So I don't know if that means the franchise tag, but if they use the franchise tag on Jameis Winston, then they just have to pay him the big money, $17-18 million to be able to keep him. You know, because remember, I mean, he's a linebacker, not a defensive end, although he can make the conversion to defensive end. You know, Yannick down in Jacksonville is going to get big money, but I think that there's still going to be some defensive ends out there. But the key for, I think, Seattle is obviously they're not going to spend $18-19 million and lose the chance to get compensatory picks. I mean, John Snyder is going to be smart about this. And so being smart, he'll figure out some way to make it work. But I still think the key is getting Clowney, because I still look at Clowney. He's like, okay, here's his options. Of the 4-3 defenses that still need defensive ends, you know, who is a winning team? And now Atlanta had a losing season last year, but went 7-9. He can look at that. He can look at Carolina because he's from the state, but also they're not going to be a winning team. You know, with Luke Kuechly and retiring, Greg Olsen retiring, they're going to probably not stay with Cam Newton. They're rebuilding, so he's not going to want to go there. So there's not a lot of 4-3 teams, and I think he'd be silly to go back to a 3-4 team because he's better at defensive end. And so this is still a good fit, and I don't know if it's $18 to $20 million. I mean, if it's $1 million here or there, pay the dude.
Yeah, I guess so, John. I was looking today, and maybe this is too small of a sample size, but in the three games that Clowney did not play, they had fewer sacks, and they gave up more points when Clowney wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mean, they had 20 points per game they allowed without Clowney, and 26 points a game with him.
Right.
And so I don't know, John. I'm torn on Clowney. I wrote a post today, 710sports.com, where I don't know where you draw the line, whether it's $17 million, $18 million. You were just saying the same thing, and it's going to be a tough one for Snyder to figure out.
Well, I think what it comes down to, and let's throw this into the equation, what do you pay Jaron Reed? Because, again, it's hard to find big-body guys like that that can have the potential to get 10 sacks, but he didn't have the big sack season. He had the six-game suspension. I mean, I think what it comes down to is that you pay one of the two, because I don't think Reed's going to come in for a discount.
I'd pay Clowney over Reed.
Agreed. That's what I would do, too.
Well, and just the position itself, I mean, you don't unless it's Aaron Donald, obviously
that's
a little bit different, but, yeah.
Or an interior lineman, yeah. Hey, by the way, Jim, did you do your research on 43-year-old quarterbacks? Or?
I did not, Bob.
Okay.
Although,
well, what the heck?
No, I was over at McDonald's Own Factory, and I was doing some research. I was the Seahawks free agents, number of draft picks the Seahawks have in 2020.
But you were going to prove the professor wrong about Brady?
You know why I didn't do that?
Because you forgot.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Still John, I know you were looking forward to that debate.
I was really looking forward to that, yeah.
Oh, man.
I got a trivia question for the professor,
sure.
Though.
Oh, go ahead.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, now keep in mind of the person who's asking you this question, and it might give you a clue as to...
Does it somehow involve Gardner Minshew?
It's a cougar.
No.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, there's a clue here, John.
Oh,
there's
okay.
a clue here. Okay, so Derrick Henry, he's rushed, 30 times or more in the last three games.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name the last NFL player that mm-hmm. rushed 30 or more times in three consecutive games? It happened in 2009.
Adrian Peterson?
No.
Okay.
Remember, John.
Good guess.
You got a clue from Dave Wyman that it's a Coug.
Oh, it's a Coug. So
the only running back I know is Max Borgie.
No, there's not. That wouldn't be Max Borgie.
He played for the Browns in 2009. There's another tip for you.
I give up.
Jerome Harrison, John.
There you go.
Oh, Jerome Harrison.
That Jerome Harrison.
You don't remember Jerome Harrison?
No, I remember him, sure.
Yeah. Okay, at 39.
Well, wasn't at the top of my thinking at the
right.
time. But
look at that, the 4-2-5 had it, John.
Yeah, that's good.
Good for them.
Okay,
good.
Come on, John, brush up now. Work on your game.
John, we've talked about quarterbacks moving, whether it's Breeze or not Breeze, but Philip Rivers or Tom Brady or what have you. You brought up Cam Newton. What's the perception of him just in terms of what he's got left in the tank and where does he fit in?
It's hard to tell because, again, I think what it comes down to is that where are the Panthers now? And if the Panthers are in a rebuilding mode, then they probably will go with a young quarterback. I mean, I still see the scenario that, and I know this sounds silly, maybe stupid. It is. I got some insight for some people, but again, it wouldn't surprise me that Joe Burrow doesn't want to go to Cincinnati. And so, if he tries to pull a Eli Manning like Eli did with the Chargers in 2004, I can see David Tepper, trading up to get him because you got Joe Brady now from LSU on the staff. Yeah, so I can definitely see some connections right there.
Really? So you're getting word from your inside sources that say he potentially does not want to play in Cincinnati?
I know that's his dad's feeling, which, of course, that was Eli's dad's feeling, too, after Archie went to the Chargers, visited him, and came back and says, I don't think you should go there. And Eli listened and ended up getting with the Giants.
Hey,
but I don't know where Joe stands on this, but I pretty well know where the father stands. And then again, Joe's going to dictate what he wants to do. He's 24. I mean, you can see that he'll smoke a cigar after practice and go out having a few belts with his teammates after the game. But I don't know if he really wants to be a Bengal, but I know his father is kind of gun shy on that.
So what you're saying is he's a drinker and a smoker, John.
Well, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. And in fact, it was funny because the thought was that
now is a gambler.
Yeah, they want him to come down to, that was Alex Karras, but they wanted him to come down to the Senior Bowl. And even it's just a matter of working for a couple of days, not even playing in the game. But of course, right now, Joe hasn't committed to that. And of course, who's coaching the staff that he would be on? The Bengals.
Aha. Uh-huh. Hey, John, I see a story on Pro Football Talk. NFLPA informs players of areas of tentative agreement. So we're talking about the labor deal and some of the sticking points, maximum percentage of revenue, of course, for players.
Yeah, give me some of the details because I did 4 hours on Sirius this afternoon. So
that's always number one, right? Percentage of players, minimum cash spending requirements for each club and league wide. And these are the things that they think are big sticking points. Continuation of an increase in the NFLPA legacy fund. So that means the pre-93 players, right. You know, to get some of those guys more pension, increases for individual minimum salaries. I mean, it's all, you know, of course, money type of things, but, you know, rules for players drafted in the first round and for restricted free agents and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like this is the first time in, I don't know, since the offseason that I've heard any kind of update on a labor agreement. Maybe you have.
Yeah, well, they've been making progress. It's just a matter that, I know going to the Super Bowl last year on that Monday, I was already getting tipped that they should get something done, and I still think they will get something done. I know that one of the most recent offers by the owners was a little over 48%, which is above the 47% that they currently make. And, of course, one of the reasons for that is that the NFL is adamant about getting, you know, stadium credit for the new stadiums because, you know, their money ran out in the middle of the deal and, you know, the players are always willing to, you know, invest in the investment of new stadiums because it's more revenue for them. But if you're going to do that, because that's about 1.5%, you know, you have to go up to, you know, you're not going to take less than the percentage. So I figured that they had to go above the 48.5 to at least satisfy the players, and I would imagine they would. The talk in the last couple weeks has been now the players aren't as reluctant to do the 17 games, and the owners are holding on right now to go in 17 games, but, you know, they'll have to switch because, you know, some people think if the owners get back to the 16 games, they can get done something pretty quick. And so the fact that the Players Association got that word out as opposed to save your money, we're going to be locked out here, I think that that's encouraging. I think they can get something done before the combine.
John, I was shamed into doing some research on the fly here. And so
was this over at McDonald's in Factoria?
No, it wasn't. It was not, John. There have only been
five. Is the McRib back?
No, I just had a Diet Coke. You know, you can get any size drink there at McDonald's for a dollar. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no McRib, though.
Did you tip?
No, I did not tip, John.
Okay, that's okay.
I didn't.
Wait,
I didn't.
Do you tip at McDonald's, John?
I haven't really eaten too much at McDonald's of late.
Okay, so, all right, Professor, there have been five quarterbacks who have played at the age of 43 or older in NFL history, and we all know that Tom Brady wants to play next year at the age of 43, and I think he's going to be terrible doing it. Okay, George Blanda, you and I are old enough to remember him.
Yep.
Although
yep.
It seemed like he
was
just
more of a kicker then.
He was more kicking it, but he went to the age of 48.
Right.
All right, so the age of 44, we had three quarterbacks who made it. Steve DeBerg, Warren Moon, and Vinny Testaverde.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they were all terrible at 44. I don't have that in front of me. I'm just assuming they were.
Yeah.
Doug Flutie at the age of 43, that's when he hung it up. That was his last year. And that's it, John. That's the sample size that Tom Brady's going after.
Yeah.
And you still think he's going to be decent?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, see, because, again, his game is quick reads, get rid of the ball. I mean, he's never been able to move. I mean, he's a statue there for the most part. But the statue is able to get rid of the ball quickly because he knows where to go. I mean, hey, Drew Brees is undersized. he's like Russell Wilson. I mean, it's a struggle for him to see over his offensive linemen, but he's able to anticipate and get the ball to some people. So again, he's just really good at all this stuff.
I wonder if I could outrun Tom Brady right now. I've already challenged Chris Sale to a fight. Now I want a race. I want a foot race.
I'd take you in that.
Would you?
Yep.
I don't know.
You like him in the foot race, just not the fight.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. You got it backwards, yeah, it seems like.
I'm just, boy, John, all these kickers that made it over the age of 40.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all these
guys?
It's
a little bit of an easier game.
Gary Anderson, John Carney, Eddie Murray, Matt Bryant, Phil Dawson.
Oh, if there's going to be one position.
Jan Stenerud.
Oh, I remember. Jan. Yeah.
How old was Seabass?
Oh, he made it, what, 41, John?
41, yeah.
Yeah. Heck of a tackler, that kid.
Oh, hey. Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, that's the one thing that he can move. If there's a tackle, he can move away from it.
Certainly he can. He gets a little quicker off the field at that point. John's
really good running off the field to the sidelines there.
Just fall down and be a speed bump, would you, man? Yeah. Anyway, John, we'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There he is, the Professor John Clayton with us every day at 4 o'clock. Meanwhile, we're going to continue to look at Seahawks free agents. We've been looking at a couple of players each day, figuring out if the Seahawks should make a move to keep them here or let them go. We're going to take a look at two more players coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. You guys can continue to text in 710-710, the Coors Light text line throughout the show. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. Moore, I think we're getting a good collection of mean texts that we can assemble for Friday. So hopefully that material is being set aside. You're not even going to be here for it.
No, I won't be, but I'm assembling more research on 43-year-old quarterbacks, and it does not look good for the professor and his case for Tom Brady.
Is that right?
Yeah, the initial returns are not good.
Okay.
For John Clayton.
Jim's doing his homework now.
But he's Tom Brady.
He is Tom Brady.
I know you've said this before. Like, why did you ever bet against him?
But when you look at Hall of Fame quarterbacks from the past, which I haven't yet, but remember Joe Montana, how good he was? But
he was pretty good in Kansas
City. I don't remember. Was
he did some good stuff with the Chiefs.
Last year there, though, or a guy like Joe Namath with the Rams.
Yeah, but he had two bad knees that impacted him even before he got there.
I hit him one time on a Monday night football game after he released the ball and it was clean.
Montana?
Yeah, knocked him down. I felt bad.
Did you?
Yeah.
You're like, that's Joe Montana.
I was like, that's Joe Montana, man.
Yeah. And I don't think, does there need to be a trend? Does there need to be a history for Brady to be the outlier and say, you know what, this guy is bucking all the trends? I mean, he's just different.
He is, but he's going to be 43 like the rest of the quarterbacks that didn't do so well.
At some point, Jim, you will be right that age will become problematic. And, you know, when he's 47, Jim will go, told you.
Yeah, exactly. When he gets to 60, whatever.
Is this Jim being an ageist again?
Yes,
he brought this
he
up
is.
Yesterday.
I just like to throw stuff out from time to time that you don't hear on other shows, probably because it's not all that interesting, but what the hell.
And that's where we get the mean
text. That's what we try to do here.
Telling Maura she could assemble for Friday.
Try to throw things out there that are uninteresting.
I'm here for everyone for that.
Well, we've been looking at, you did your top 10 list again at 710sports.com. Jim did an article on the top 10 free agents the Seahawks should be making an effort to re-sign, and he ranked them. We've been taking a couple each day. Let's talk about one of them that you wrote another piece on, Jadeveon Clowney. I want him back. I want him back. The Seahawks are in a good position salary cap-wise. I think the number's around $60 million they're going to have in salary cap room.
Yeah, 58.
So, 58. I was way off. So they've got a lot of money to spend. So it's not like, well, geez, we got to pinch our pennies here because we've got other areas to address. You can afford him. You draft pick wise, you're in a much, much better spot than you were last year, where you had to maneuver and trade Frank Clark and accumulate picks and all of that. It feels like this is a good position for them to make a commitment. I'm not saying you overspend. I'm not saying you give the guy $25 million bucks a year to be here, but is he in $18-19 million a year? I don't know what it's going to require to bring him back. But well, I hope they're competitive, at least, in getting him back here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the question is, at what point does Jadeveon Clowney, and, you know, I hate to say it, but the hometown discount thing. You know, remember we brought that up with somebody, and they were like, this ain't Costco, man.
Yeah,
come on,
right.
Man. You know, we're not. But at what point, you know, let's say it's $22 million is what somebody offers him somewhere else. Maybe it's Jacksonville or someplace like that. You know, doesn't matter. But at what level would he stay here?
That's a good question. You know, By all accounts, he liked it, according to Duane Brown. The players loved him. The coaches loved it. It seemed like a great marriage. Everybody loved each other.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things you can always do there is make up for it in guaranteed money. You know, get guarantees if it's a lesser dollar, you know, amount. And he doesn't seem to me, Clowney does not seem to me anyway, if we haven't, you know, gotten to know him that much, but just based on his humility, kind of humbling himself in front of the team as far as, you know, like, I'm going to play with, for you guys. He doesn't seem like a guy that wants to go out there and have the flashy number. Because a lot of the guys, they want that. They want to, because money equals respect. But, you know, if he were able to take a little bit less and stay here, I just wonder what that amount is. I mean, you're not going to take $10 million less, but would you take $3 million less?
Well, here's Clowney talking about not so much looking for the big check, but wanting to play for a contender.
I don't know what to look for. Man. I just want to win. I'm trying to get to that Super Bowl by any means. So that's what I'm looking for. Who's going to get me there? I ain't looking to go get on no sorry team for no money. And that's, that ain't going to fly. I ain't going to keep my body through all of that just to lose, you know, 16 games and go home with my check. I hate that. So that ain't what I'm doing. So if I can't win no Super Bowl, I ain't going to no team that can't win.
See, I like hearing that. I'm not going to no sorry team just for a check. So
yeah, so I would think the Seahawks are the favorite to land him, but where do you draw the line? And Clayton was saying $17 million, $18 million. Does he want $20 million? I would think he would want $20 million because he – one of the things when he came here that he insisted on was not being franchise tagged at the end of the year.
And I don't blame him for that, wanting to go out there and lock down security over a number of years rather than the 1 year. But hearing that makes me feel better. Does it mean he's going to sign up for cheap? No, it doesn't. But his priority is winning. He knows he's going to get a lot of money somewhere. He can have both. He can get a lot of money here and have the opportunity to make it to a Super Bowl. Maybe it's not the most money. You talk about if Jacksonville offered him, I think he's going to look at that and go, well, I'm not going there. They're not ready to win, right? Yeah. I mean, that just by him saying that, the field shrinks, right? The field's going to shrink based on who's got the ability financially to even pay him to begin with, and then it shrinks even more based on who's legitimately a Super Bowl contender that he deems a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, but even, you know, if it is Jacksonville, I mean, he says all that, but at that point, you go, okay, that's $4 million less a year that I'm going to be taking over a four-year period. That's $16 million. I mean, you got to think about that one.
I'm holding him to his word.
Yeah.
I'm not taking no sorry, playing for a sorry team just for a check. And here's Pete Carroll on whether they've had any talks with Clowney to this point.
Not specifically, because it really wasn't time and place, but that really is underway. Yeah, it's happening. We'd love to have him, you know, be here.
Yeah, I'm looking at it though, and I was just doing I was actually doing some research today, Bob, and with Clowney. So he didn't play in three games, and the Seahawks went 2-1 in those games. But I thought, well, they're probably worse without Clowney. But you remember that Eagles game? They went back there and they had three sacks in that game. They averaged two sacks a game without Clowney in those three games. With Clowney, they averaged 1.7. I also thought it was interesting, and hopefully the listeners do too. They gave up 26 points on the average in the 13 games with him and 20 points in the three games without him. Now, maybe you can look at it.
Who were the three teams they played without him?
Well, the Eagles, Panthers, and Cardinals. Yeah, you can water that down if you'd like. But I guess my point is, and I just was sitting there thinking, okay, the run defense for the Seahawks was not great this year. We like Clowney as a run defender, though.
Yeah.
But they were 22nd overall, even with Clowney. Mm-hmm. So how much worse are you going to get without him? You could make a case if
you
wanted to.
You've said yourself, Jim, what does this team look – what does that line look like without him?
No, I know. But there's so many different things you have to weigh out on whether you want to pay him. And you could maybe get a pass rusher, a guy that's strictly a pass rusher. Like, let's this Shaquille Barrett guy from Tampa Bay with 19.5 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't franchise him in Tampa Bay, you can make a case the Seahawks could afford to bring a guy like that in. And you'd have a guy that you know is going to get after the quarterback, and yet you like everything. He's so versatile, Clowney, what he can give that defense. But I tend to look at it where there's a plan A and a plan B, and that you draw the line somewhere for Schneider, whether it's $16 million, $17 million,
$18 million. Oh, I'm sure they have. Yeah, I'm sure they have a line. I'm sure they've had their discussions like, listen, we cannot go over this number, whatever that is.
Well, as crazy as it sounds, but I make a routine out of doing that, you could make a case for Quandre Diggs being more important to the Seattle defense than Jadeveon Clowney.
But he's not a concern because he signed, I think, for two more seasons.
I know, but it's that weird to me that you're looking at a guy who was a fifth rounder out from Detroit. But when you look at the difference in the takeaways when Diggs was playing compared to when he wasn't, And the Seattle defense wasn't that much different without Clowney than they were with him.
Well, he had a pick six. I think he had four forced fumbles. He had, you know, three sacks. I mean, he was just an all around productive guy.
I know, but don't you, the one lacking thing, the one that stood out more than anything else, the 28 sacks they had this year.
Yeah.
And you look at what Green Bay did, bringing in the Smith brothers in free agency last year, and what a difference it made for their team.
Well, the key is brothers, more than one. You had Clowney and who? Clowney and who?
Rasheem Green.
Ansa was a bust. Rasheem was here and there.
Yeah, he had four sacks.
It's not like you had the complement of two studs out there. It was him and J.J. Watt or the Smith brothers.
But where they are with the salary cap, they could go after Barrett and Ngakoue.
Maybe they will.
I'm just throwing it out there.
What was the conclusion of your article?
I think Clowney's a great player, too.
What was the conclusion to the piece you wrote? They should or
I
shouldn't
just,
go
well,
out
Well, I just kind of was looking at it, and it probably was more let Clowney go if he wants $20 million and go after somebody who's more of a pure pass rusher than him. No, I know.
Maybe he can be a better pass rusher. You know, maybe he'll develop into that. He obviously has the skills to play the run and everything, and maybe we do get that from him later. But he's getting older, and yeah, it's
26.
Yeah, and that's still very young, but you know, if he can play the pass as good as the run, I mean, he's worth the $20 to $25 million, whatever those guys are getting nowadays.
All right, coming up, we touched on this. An arrest warrant has been issued for Odell Beckham Jr. for just really what amounts to just a dumb move by him. You'll hear about that when we sweep the dial next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
You thought the news about Odell Beckham would be whether or not he was handing out real or fake dollar bills to LSU players after the game on the field in view of cameras. If you thought that would be it, you would be wrong. The New Orleans police has now issued an arrest warrant for Odell Beckham for his behavior in the locker room, smacking the backside of a police officer who's trying to get LSU players to stop smoking cigars in the locker room, even though Joe Burrow just spent 10 minutes outside the locker room smoking one. Anyway, they've issued an arrest for Odell Beckham for simple battery. And then the Browns have just released a statement saying they are aware of the incident and talked to Odell and his representatives, and they're cooperating with the proper authorities to immediately address this somehow real situation.
So ridiculous. So dumb. This whole, I feel bad for LSU on some level that the whole story after this championship game is now focused and centered on Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, and I think Danny had the same, I think, take I did, was the whole thing of him passing out the money kind of put all the focus on him.
Oh, yeah.
It should be on LSU, man.
And now this furthers that.
Yeah, and then there's more of it. So it comes off as incredibly selfish behavior by him. And I would think LSU probably wouldn't invite him back down on the sidelines in the locker room ever again.
Did you watch the video? I can't remember if you saw
it. I haven't seen the video, but the way you explained it to me, I thought maybe he just did kind of a little love tap.
Oh, no. He kind of stares at him for a minute, and then he walks up and whacks him on the backside.
Well, why didn't they arrest him right away then?
And then just kind of stares at him like, what? Not like it was in the joyous celebration, like, hey, man, I'm just messing around. Isn't this great? No, it was just a weird look on his face like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just thinking, what were you doing?
I just don't get the whole money thing, too.
He's a big shot. Just wanted to, I don't know, man. It's so dumb, and it's all about him. It's not about the team now.
I believe that adversity is our opportunity to keep exploring, because we will all face pain and tragedy. But it's clear to me that beyond the human capacity of imagination, our greatest strength as a species has been our ability to bravely share our weaknesses and vulnerabilities with each other.
Steve Gleason, former Saints player who's battling ALS, former Coug.
Yeah.
Receives the Congressional Medal of Honor. Is that what it was?
Yes. Congressional Medal of Honor.
I have a hard time watching it. It makes me emotional. Anytime they do a celebration or a story about him, as much as I've seen it over the years, it makes me emotional every time. I really, there'll be times I'll turn it.
He's an amazing person, and for his not only ability but also desire to try to inspire people, having been dealt a bad hand, you know, that's, I think, the thing that impresses me the most about him, what kind of a guy he is in that regard.
I marvel at people that deal with those things and have that kind of attitude. I think I'd be angry and bitter and just pissed.
Why me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Steve Gleason said, "This honor represents some joy and encouragement and even drive for the tens of thousands of extraordinary families enduring life with ALS." And I'm with you on that. I had a good friend who died after battling ALS for several years up in Ketchikan. It was my first landlord when I got out of college. Bob Norton, he grew up on Mercer Island, and I went up there and I saw Bob and was able to watch some games and movies with him before he died. And it was just seeing what he was going through and seeing what his wife and kids were going through. And boy, Steve Gleason speaking out. And just a great honor for him getting the Congressional Gold Medal.
Well, you know, that's why we get up in the morning. Stretch and I get up so early in the morning to go and get in the weight room, so that when you get illegally blocked in the back like I did, it doesn't hurt. I didn't go to the ground. He didn't knock me down. Eugene can run, and he's big, and he's fast, and I was just embarrassed because I said, if I get a penalty, the players aren't going to, you know, I mean, after all this stuff I tell them and all this crap I talk to them about penalties and being disciplined and keeping your composure, and here I am halfway out on the field looking up at the play on the Jumbotron. So, you know, the get back coach got to do a better job. I got to do a better job of getting the hell out of the way. But I showed the team this morning because I knew they were going to laugh at me anyway. So I figured I might as well show them first.
That's what illegal I like block Mike in the back.
Yeah. Doesn't that make you like Mike Vrabel now?
Yeah, I mean, that was
funny. Because I haven't heard that many good things about him.
Well, and just seeing him on the Hard Knocks, and, you know, I know Mora said that he was kind of taunting Belichick a little bit after that. So, I mean, I know that breaks everybody's heart that you would dare to taunt Belichick, but this made me like him because it's funny, and he said, you know, the guy on the sideline was a big dude. I'm sure he was giving him an earful the whole
illegal block in the back. I like that.
That was great. That was great.
Good sense of humor there, Jim.
Yeah, I'm pulling hard for the Titans.
I know you are.
It's going to be a fun game now. The more closer it gets, the more I think. Yeah.
All right, good stuff there. All right, coming up, we've talked about some of the national media discussion centered around Pete Carroll holding Russell Wilson back, all that. We're going to talk with someone who believes that that's in fact the case. Joining us next will be Jeff Schwartz of SiriusXM and ESPN Radio. He's got a few thoughts on what the Seahawks should do with this offense. Are they holding Russell Wilson back? What moves do they need to make in the draft to make this team more advanced, more modern, I guess, would be the proper way of saying it. Jeff Schwartz will be joining us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.